And now, our story continues. The violent storm that had sprung up so suddenly earlier tonight had quieted somewhat, but the rain still fell heavily, monotonously. It was after 10. The downtown section of Elkhorn City was practically deserted. The cocktail lounge of the Crescent Hotel had one customer, Dr. Gordon Foster, who was in a very gloomy frame of mind.
Rain gets on my nerves. Monotonous. Just like my life here. That certainly is a brilliant, profound analogy. Feeling sorry for myself. Well, I go home. But, on the other hand, why go home? Now, if I had someone like Elizabeth to go home to, she wouldn't have me. No. I wasn't enough of a genius for her. I wonder what I could have been if I'd had Elizabeth. But Paul has her. And the hospital. Everything I want. It won't be so long now until he's gone to New York. Suppose Elizabeth can't make him stay there. There's just a possibility she might not be able to. Then I'd have to find some other way to dislodge him. Yes, I'm going to...
Dr. Foster's thoughts broke off abruptly. From where he sat, he could see into the lobby beyond. A young woman had just come in. At first, Dr. Foster only made a vague mental note that she was unusually attractive. Then his curiosity was aroused by her disheveled, windblown appearance. Then finally, he realized he knew the girl. That was when Dr. Gordon Foster lost his train of thought, when he realized that the young woman was Virginia Martin. On a sudden impulse, Dr. Foster hurried out of the bar and across the lobby.
Well, Miss Martin, I was just wishing I had someone to talk to have a drink with me. I must say that meeting you here is quite a surprise. I might even say that it has all kinds of curious aspects.
Really, Dr. Foster? Why?
I don't know until I've explored them. How about a drink?
No, thank you.
Are you meeting someone?
No.
Then come along. You look as if you could use one. You look as though you've been caught in a storm.
Yes. Yes, I was.
Look here. Have a drink with me and I'll drive you home.
Home?
To Martha Box, that is. Isn't that where you're staying?
No, I... If you'll excuse me, Dr. Foster.
If you have one drink with me. I thoroughly disapprove of attractive young women being antisocial. Besides... I'm very curious as to what you're doing here.
I came here to get a room. I'm tired. I want to get some sleep.
Hospitality running out of the box?
Goodbye, Dr. Foster.
Bye. Bye. Wonder what's the matter with her. Certainly is acting oddly. Nervous. Elizabeth says she's a mysterious girl. I know she's a little suspicious of her. I'm rather intrigued myself. Just for the record, I'd like to know why she's staying here at the hotel. Wonder what's happened. I could call Elizabeth. No, too late for that. I'll call her in the morning. Time enough then.
Here you are, Miss Martin. Number 121.
Thank you.
Have you any other luggage?
No, just this box.
Well, I'll show you to your room.
But there's no need, thank you. If you'll just tell me when the bus leaves in the morning.
Bus? What bus? To where?
To Chicago.
Say, you're kind of all in, aren't you?
Well, I'm just tired. If you could just tell me
I think I've got a schedule here. Yeah. Here it is. Now, let's see. Chicago. You make connections at Ridgefield, don't you? Oh, here it is. One pulls out at 5:30 a.m.
Will you call me at 4:30 then?
Well, there's a later one at 10 in the morning. Oh, you sure look as if you could use a little sleep. Why don't you take the later bus? Might as well get your money's worth out of your room, too.
Please, I've got to catch that early bus. Not the 10 o'clock bus, not the 2 o'clock, but the 5:30 one. Do you understand?
Well, don't get sore at me, lady. I was just trying to be helpful.
I'm sorry. You will call me.
4:30 sharp.
Thank you. Good night.
Good night. Virginia Martin. Hey, she didn't put down no address. No luggage either. Just that box. Virginia Martin. Wonder if that's her real name.
And as she walked down the corridor towards her room, the girl who calls herself Virginia Martin, in spite of her overwhelming fatigue, was dimly aware that her behavior must have seemed curious and unintelligible to Dr. Foster and to the desk clerk. She was so eager to escape attention. Had she just focused all the more upon herself? The young woman was too tired to think very clearly about it, too cold and exhausted even to care very much at the moment. She got out of her wet clothes and, shivering, got into bed. The events of this night flashed through her mind. Her departure on the bus this evening, the explosion at the cement plant a few miles out of town, the two critically injured men they'd found when they'd gone up to investigate, men for whom she'd broken a promise to herself, men she'd helped as Alice Logan would have, as a nurse would have. Now, she thought, the men were relatively safe. At least they were in the hospital now in the hands of Dr. Bach and Dr. Cabot. At least they'd have a chance.
I wish I could have stayed at the hospital. Wish I could have followed this thing through. But I think somehow Dr. Paul will be able to save those men. Funny how much confidence I've gotten in that man since I've been here. I've never even been in the hospital. Never seen him operate. Wish I could. Wish I were in the hospital watching him. Oh, what's the matter with me? My part in this is done. I've got to start thinking of myself. What my chances are of getting away from here. Dr. Foster's seen me here now. Well, I'd forgotten. Corey Murdoch saw me with Dr. Paul at the little cafe near the bus station. Suppose... No, this is ridiculous. I talk like some fugitive. Everyone's going to be too busy tonight to worry about me. And I'm not going to worry. I'm not going to. I'll get away.
Virginia Martin's mind, too tired to think anymore, relaxed. She fell asleep. And at Miles Memorial Hospital, Dr. Paul Bach comes out of Surgery A and into the scrub room. Dolly Mae Tucker gets a clean cap and gown for him, ties on a surgeon's gag, and after scrubbing up once more, Dr. Paul walks into Surgery B, where Dr. John Cabot is operating on Harry Wilkinson. The anesthetist is at the head of the table. A nurse stands beside Johnny Cabot near the instrument tray.
Johnny, am I glad to see you. Sponge, have you just finished with the Paulson kid?
For the present.
Sponge?
He's going to need some skin graft.
Retractor? No, not that one.
Sorry, Doctor.
We should take a look at this case, Dr. Paul.
In just a minute, I want to have a look at the x-ray and these reports. Depressed fracture.
Sponge?
It's a lucky thing that he arrived.
What?
Nothing, Johnny. Nothing.
Dr. Paul Bach stood there, a sheet of paper in his hand. A report. One that hadn't been made on the regular hospital sheets. One that had evidently been made at the time of the accident. And yet, curiously enough, it could have been made by someone of the hospital staff. It was a professional report. Dr. Paul Bach put it down, went over to stand opposite Dr. Cabot at the operating table. But in the back of his mind, he kept seeing the handwriting of the paper he'd just put down. Handwriting that seemed to have some connection with him, that he felt he should recognize. Yes, Dr. Bach, it is handwriting that you've seen before. This same evening, as a matter of fact. The handwriting of Virginia Martin. I wonder if your mind will make the connection. I wonder if you'll remember.